Hey everyone, welcome to episode 2 of the Gym Class Strength Podcast. Our guest today is Scott Thompson. Scott is a PE teacher and swim coach in Oakland, California. A native of Michigan, Scott was a state champion and high school All-American, and would go on to compete at the University of Florida for Coach Greg Troy, who was the head coach of the 2008 United States Olympic swim team. Scott attained an Olympic trials qualifying standard in the 400 IM before moving on to coaching full-time. Scott teaches elementary physical education and is the head coach and founder of Oaklantis Swimming, currently the only year-round swim team in Oakland, with the goal of making swimming accessible to every student in the city. Scott really is an expert in his field, and I'm extremely excited about this conversation. He shares an underlying philosophy of education that I find very powerful, and I hope you all hear some advice you can implement with your students, athletes, or just your kids. Thanks again to Scott for his time. Enjoy the episode, and thanks for listening. All right, welcome to the second podcast episode of Gym Class Strength. Today's guest is Scott Thompson, as you heard in the introduction. Scott, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so quick little bit note of background. When I came back to teaching PE after a hiatus, I was immediately overwhelmed teaching elementary school as opposed to high school, where I had done sort of my teacher training. I called Scott in a panic and asked for tips on teaching elementary school, and the subsequent advice completely turned my world upside down. So I'm really thankful for the opportunity to talk to you, Scott, in a more formal way. And I'm also excited for more teachers to be able to hear, you know, some of the advice that you've shared with me in the past. So real briefly, can you talk about how you got into teaching and coaching?
Cool. Thanks for those kind words. The podcast is going to turn you into a better person too. It started kind of when I was finishing my swimming career at the University of Florida. Kind of just like a lot of athletes, I think, that have dedicated their lives to a sport. And you kind of get towards the end of that after kind of fully immersing yourself for, you know, 16 years of your youth, not really knowing what to do. And there was a teaching program that I applied for, Teach for America and Oakland Teaching Fellows. And my sister was out in Oakland. I was in Florida. She was working at Oakland Teaching Fellows. And then I ended up coming out and doing that program. That's where we met. So it just seemed, it was the most natural thing.
Yeah, you had told me one time that you wanted to be a PE teacher since you were a little kid.
Right.
What was it initially that attracted you to physical education and activity, sports, things like that?
I don't know. That's kind of funny. I just in like some like old papers, like at my parents' house in Michigan, there's a little assignment from kindergarten where it was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I put gym teacher about that when I was deciding. Actually, when I applied for Oakland Teaching Fellows, I think I applied to do history or something. So then they just placed me in PE. So I actually, until I got placed in PE, wasn't thinking about being a PE teacher.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing I want to note is you mentioned Teach for America, and I think sort of an open secret in teaching is that a lot of teachers who are really successful in the classroom were rejected from programs like that, not to pick on Teach for America by any means, but, you know, I can speak for myself, like, I didn't get accepted into the first, you know, few jobs that I applied to. A bunch of us who had gone through the teaching fellowship program had been, you know, rejected from other things. I had applied for DC teaching fellows, didn't even get an interview there. So anyway, for anyone listening who thinks that it's a straight road from college into teaching, that's definitely not the case. At least it has not been our experience. But I think you benefit from that struggle a little bit. So, all right. So just as a little bit of background, we came through a very, very structured program. Can you talk a little bit about sort of, you know, and I could share my experiences as well. What was the expectation for us as teachers when we started teaching in Oakland?
All right, I'm trying to the structure of the program. I guess the first thing I really remember about it is getting, I don't know if you remember, we got this huge binder, and we were supposed to read all of it and be prepared for the program. So the first, I mean, your question is about the expectation or?
Sure. So like, give us an example of what we were expected to do as teachers in terms of sort of that strict adherence to state standards, classroom structures, things like that.
I think the funny thing initially is that we were 22 and had never really had a job. And then, you know, coming out of college, here they are like, you know, it's May. Here's your binder with all of this stuff that you need to read about being a teacher. And then you're going to come do 6 weeks here. And then in class of kids. And so the expectation was that I don't, you know, being kind of 12 years into this now, I don't think the expectation of anybody in charge was that we were going to do a good job. Because if I was hiring someone directly out of college with no teaching experience, I definitely wouldn't expect them to do a good job. So that's kind of, I don't know if funny is the right word. Maybe irksome is a better word.
Sure.
But definitely funny. I mean, you got to laugh at it, right? That's been the plan. but they kind of prey on our, I think the expectation, you know, isn't that we're going to do a good job, but that we're going to be really motivated to bring a lot of energy. And I think that's what we did.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess, you know, looking at it through that lens, you know, maybe we had our hands held a little bit in terms of you're going to start a class this way. It's going to follow a certain rhythm. They were sort of trying to dummy proof it, for lack of a politically correct term, which a lot of us went in and immediately fell on our face in the classroom, you know, trying to stick to those structures. So that brings me, you know, kind of to my next question about, you know, what did you learn over your years as, you know, physical education specifically, that you have changed your mind about?
I mean, that's such a huge question. I mean, as you mentioned, me and you have been talking about this over hours and hours and hours. I think going in, one thing that they really, where I taught, was that I was involved really heavily in a lot of the professional development, and the mentality was, and I do agree with this in a lot of ways, was that, like, you know, good teaching is good teaching. And so that, you know, teaching PE, you know, the place where I think I kind of started to not agree as much anymore was where it was like, you know, teaching PE is no different from teaching English. And like, you need all these same elements, you know, the do now, you need the, you know, all sure. of that stuff. And I think eventually, you realize that stuff all is important. For example, a warm up. But like, maybe it would have been better learning about teaching PE in the language that we grew up with as athletes, you know, because we're trying to teach fitness and athletics and sports and a lot of physical skills. And I think it got a little bit confusing there for a while, trying to make up a do now that, you know, we were working with English teachers. And it just, I think what has changed for me over time is having confidence in what I believe a structure of a class should be. And, you know, so many times I've just abandoned those rules just on a whim. You know, recently when I've been much more successful with my classes on the whole than in the first couple years, I'll just, if I have something planned and you know, the kids will come in and I have and I realize it's not going to work, like I just scrap it. Whereas at first, we definitely didn't have the confidence to go away from these, you know, research proven things that were going to make classes work.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it is an experience thing. I don't think that they're all wrong, but I think that I wouldn't exactly know right now how to approach helping new teachers do something that was just an experience-based thing that you kind of have to figure out on your own. But I do think that there was a level of dogma. There was kind of a lot of dogma about like what needed to happen. And I would say on the whole, when I really started gaining confidence, I really abandoned a lot of that stuff and just decided to do only what works. And then things evolved for me.
Right. Yeah. I want to jump into something that you had said, to me. So I took a break from teaching, came back, and I was completely out of my element. I called you and said something along the lines of, I can't get them all to listen while I'm trying to teach the game. And you said, well, why do you need them to? And it totally, sort of shattered my thinking around what direct instruction meant, what it looked like in the classroom. Can you elaborate on some of those lessons, like especially at the elementary level, that you've learned in terms of the way that you teach games?
Yeah, that was a big thing. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I think a lot of the ways that we were, right, so going back kind of full circle to where you started, like what were our expectations, in that binder, there were two things that were two main things associated with teaching: classroom instruction, classroom management, and instructional design and delivery. And those were like these two big things on this big graphic organizer. And a lot of the ways that we were assessed, one of the big ways we were assessed as teachers, when we would get observed, they'd be like, hey, when you were talking, the kids weren't listening to you. And that was really terrible, because it was a terrible experience, because as you learn, and as you wrote in one of your your blogs, you said, we experience a lot of behavior when we go into the classroom that that kids just do, like talking over you. And right. Like what you might remember as a kid is like when the teacher said, like, we're starting, you kind of perked up and just shut up and listened. And, and then when you go in as a teacher, you're like, oh, this doesn't happen. They're not listening. Like they don't kind of just start listening when I say, we're going to start class right now. And oftentimes it felt like kids were just actively, not listening, kind of like they would be looking at you in the eye and like talking to their friend, and you're just like, this is really awkward. So, and you get kind of a lot of feedback from people that observe you, like, oh, like that's not good, or, that's something you need to work on. And, so for, coming kind of in another circle around to another question, is in PE, eventually I realized, like, I was trying to have them sit down and explain this whole thing to them and like explain to the kids what we were doing. And I eventually found out that it actually doesn't really matter if you explain stuff to them right away. Like the whole class is a process. So if you come in and you say, we're playing this, whatever it is, capture the flag, like you don't have to explain the whole thing to them. Like you have to explain how to start the game, or you if you can't do something that advanced, like you do something really simple, like we're playing tag today. And what I started to realize was that that you start the game, you have to do only what can work. So right. if only you can play tag, if that's all you can do, and like frankly, like as a 22-year-old teacher with no experience, that's all you can do. And like you have to learn to, okay, like they're not listening to me, there's absolutely no point in me trying to talk right now, like we're playing tag, ready, go. And then you play that. And then you try to have success with that. And then it's good job. And then it's like, okay, what's next? You know, okay, now we'll play freeze tag. And then you play that and then you pause and then what's next? And generally, that would be a full class. That would be a full 50 minutes, just tag and freeze tag. But that, you know, I wouldn't have had the confidence as a young teacher to come in and say, like, you know, the lesson plan templates they gave us were you had to write paragraphs, like write exactly what you're going to say. And I remember that, like, write what you're going to say. Otherwise, you're going to not know what to say. And it's like, I wouldn't say anything. Now I would do what they already know and can have success with and then build from that.
I definitely have taken that from you. And which brings me to another point, which is, you know, one of the other things that you told me, cause you touched on that, you know, behavior management point. One of the things that you brought up was, you know, behavior management doesn't always work the way that we think it's going to work, but talking to kids does. So what does that look like in your classroom?
Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, so there's just a lot of different, scenarios and basically that's a huge question. I have a lot of things I want to say on it, but basically, like, you know, that whole classroom management part of what we were learning how to do, eventually I specifically remember one day, and I'll bring up, we had Jessica Biggs as our FA, right? I don't remember what it stood for, but I remember one day we were in there and we had like all started teaching and started to realize, like, okay, like kids don't listen. So what do we do? And I remember we were asking, like, well, what if they still don't listen? And she was like, well, then you do this. What if you still don't listen? Still do this. And we kept on going on and on and on. And finally she was just like, you know, you have to just get them to do something. And that really stuck with me, and I didn't actually know what that meant until, you know, I'm still learning about what it means because it's different in each case. Because what I realized was that success might be if you have to get them to do something eventually, if they don't participate, which is another thing that you get a lot of dings for as a PE teacher. So, oh, not participating. And it's like, yeah, kids don't participate sometimes. And so like a success of getting a kid to do something might be like they sit there and are quiet and not disrupting other people, and the thing that you get them to do is to know that you're going to talk to them tomorrow. So eventually, you know, I think this question is about conversation and what that does in terms of classroom management is, I think when the kids know that you're not going to let anything go, then you start to have more cohesive classes because they know that you're going to talk to them about whatever it is. And I think that's the experience piece of learning how to do that and what that looks like and how small of a thing that is sometimes. Like, it's not a big conversation. It's just like, you know, it might be a very small conversation, or it might just be them knowing that you will remember tomorrow.
Right.
And you will talk about it. So I think that conversation piece is really big. And then that builds into trust. And eventually, and the best example I have of that, probably the deepest thing that happened recently, you know, there's a really good kid in one of my classes. He plays a lot. He always plays, really good athlete, plays hard, really competitive, but, you know, started pushing boundaries. And just enough to push boundaries, like, that I knew he was pushing boundaries, but he wasn't really disrupting. I mean, he was eventually going to change the culture of the class if I let it keep going. And he would have changed as a person if I let it keep going, which is the main thing. He would have learned, oh, this is what I should do. But I was able to talk to him one day and say, hey, like, you know, I've noticed you're not really doing anything, you know, breaking the rules. Like, it's, you know, you're following the rules, you're participating, but you're pushing boundaries a little bit. And, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's something. And like, I don't know if you've noticed that. And he just looked at me, he's like, you know what, like, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I don't know what it is either. And, you know, there were tears welling up in his eyes. And it was just a moment where you realize that, like, that's the end of it. That's as far as you can possibly get at that point. And oftentimes we don't know why we're doing things, even as humans. And to be able to bring that down to the level for a kid, and to get them to just sit with that, and also just in a non-confrontational way. So, like, he was able to take that in. So that, you know, all the way to, you know, to summarize, I think conversations management take place in kids knowing that you're going to address the things that happen, and doing that in as small of ways as letting them sit there, and then knowing, you know, them knowing you're going to talk to them. And then also it gets into deep ways when you have developed really strong relationships where you can kind of help kids grow in a really profound way.
Yeah, definitely. Two things I want to bring up, and you know, I don't even know if there's a question in here, but just from, you know, me learning from you, one of the things you taught me was that we have bad days as adults. I said sometimes, you know, one time I was telling you a story, and I said, this kid, he's like, he does something, then he sits down, then he does something, and then he sits down. And you said, like, well, you know, we both go to the climbing gym. Don't you sit down in between climbs? And I think that's a really powerful thing to understand, that there's days when I come home from work and I'm completely shredded and I don't want to do anything and I don't work out and I don't make healthy choices. And I still consider myself a good person and a good teacher and all those things, right? And so the other thing I wanted to bring up is that sort of deep focus on developing quality people, as opposed to, and this is embarrassing to say, when I started teaching, and I'll just say it, I think what was most important to me was that other teachers thought I was a good teacher. And that's a very, like, dark place to be in when a kid is sitting down. And you know, to be honest, I still have a fear of that, right? That the principal is going to come out and see me and why aren't you talking to that kid? And you know, maybe I know that the kid is having a bad day and I've talked to them and they're gonna, you know, they'll be back tomorrow and things, but it looks bad if you're standing at the, you know, if the principal's standing at the top of the bleachers. And that's probably all in my head too. Our principal would probably just talk to me about it later or something like that. But in my head, I'm thinking that people are judging me and all that. So I guess, you know, one of my next questions, and I know this is going to be a difficult one, is how do you gain that confidence as a teacher that you can let kids have bad days?
Yeah, no, that's a great question because, you know, you brought up a lot of stuff. Like, as a teacher, you know, you have a boss and, like, you have other teachers and you're worried about what people are going to think and if they think you're doing a good job and, like, this perception, right? We've all seen, and I think the other side of that coin is there are teachers that we all revere. You know, you're like, what a great teacher. And you look in their class and, like, just, it's just immaculate. So there's the other side of that, that we do that as well. We look at people and we hold them up, and when really that's not probably what's going on. And there's also probably been 15 years of experience there. But I think that that confidence comes from, it definitely comes from experience. But I will go back to the, you know, I'll keep going back to the expectations we had, because I think it's important. The first things that we heard about what being a good teacher meant, that was very, very clearly defined to us what a good class was. And I think, you know, when you come in as a PE teacher, if you're, you know, I was a swimmer at the University of Florida. Like, I was an elite athlete, you know, on some level, and they hire you with part of that in mind, and then they kind of don't, they breed that out of you, like that they don't trust or let you initially develop your own way, because there's so many. So what I'm getting at is that what we know as people who are hired to do this PE job, because we have been active and healthy and dedicated to that lifestyle of, like, health and well-being, and we've been studying that, you know, like, that was our course of study in college. It was like you were training 6 hours a day. That you were becoming you know, an expert in that at a very high level. And that wasn't what we were thinking about. Like, you don't want to look at first graders as elite athletes, but as you said, you have to look at them as human beings. And so you have to respect the subject matter, and you have to respect the content knowledge, I think, is the thing I'm getting at. Like, I don't think content knowledge is respected enough, and I don't think it's given enough credit.
Sure.
And I think that if you really were like advising somebody, right, as you and I were talking in our conversation, you said this kid keeps sitting down, and then to come to that realization that, like, first of all, I know most of the adults I know don't exercise. So, like, just to hold kids to a standard that they're exercising 4 days a week, that's already, just to hold kids to a standard they're going to be exercising 4 days a week is already something that our society doesn't do largely.
Right.
And then to have this expectation that they're going to be fully, just, you know, like, when, and as you learn, like, when kids are playing hard, like, they're playing really hard and they're not pacing themselves, so they do get tired and they might be upset. And yeah, in most of the stuff that we do in exercise, we take breaks. Or, like, if you did take a friend and you wanted them to start climbing, you would, if they wanted to sit down and if they did one climb and then stopped and were like, I just want to watch, you know, feel this out for next time, you wouldn't be like, oh, like, get over there, get up. No, you're doing this. Like, we only have 30 minutes. You would be like, sweet. Like, go get a snack over there. I'm just going to finish climbing. You would want the experience to be good and for them to have a good association with it. So when they came back, they might do a little bit more because you. So I think that's the content knowledge piece. And I think that if you are a lifelong athlete, you have that. And I think that we need to get teachers to draw on their content knowledge and their experience of what's going to work for them, so that you can find out what works for you and what works for the kid. And one more piece of it that to answer that question, I think, is very often overlooked. I think this might be the most overlooked thing, is that as a teacher, you have to do what works for you. So, like, if you can get to a standard of performance in many different ways, but you can't, you know, someone else says this is how it should look, and then, like, if that doesn't feel right to you, like, you're just going to be fighting that. And you have to have the confidence to be able to do what works for you, because it's not going to help a kid if you're trying to do something that works for someone else, you know.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And then one quick story that I'll share on that is the most helpful analogy I've ever heard is, you know, my first principal ever said, you're playing music and there's an amplifier with a bunch of dials on it. So a treble, bass, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
You already have presets on that that match your personality.
Right.
You just need to turn up the dials that you can turn. You don't need to match it with someone else's presets. And for whatever reason, that kind of clicked in my brain, because I've never been the sort of wear colorful clothes and be zany and crazy in front of a class, right, which, you know, a lot of teachers have a lot of success with that.
Right.
I've always been, you know, a little bit more quiet, a little bit more serious. And I've learned that they, you know, a lot of my kids, they may have that zany, crazy teacher that they love.
Yeah.
Right before they come to me. And so maybe me being sort of a calmer influence, you might be actually what they need. Maybe they don't need the volume turned up to 11 all the time. So, you know, coming to peace with that helped me a lot. And, you know, you're elemental in that. And then the other story is that, you know, you mentioned, what does success look like? And I think that as PE teachers, we dramatically overestimate the amount of impact that we have in a calendar year. You could do, you know, the hardest metabolic conditioning workouts every day and get kids to comply with that, potentially, if you had, you know, a certain, you know, type of classroom culture. And if the kids left your class and did nothing, like you're talking about, they did nothing as adults, did you really even do anything, if they had that negative experience and you were just
right,
you were just sort of compelling them to act in these ways. Right. So, you know, I think as PE teachers, like you said, people evaluate you and they look at like, how much are they exercising? Well, I talked to, you know, our first guest yesterday was a track and field coach. And he said, there's not a workout in the world that I can do that will undo the impact of sitting all day, having negative mindset and eating junk food.
Right.
And so I think when you have those good relationships and you build that trust. So anyway, not to put my own editorial spin on it, but all things that I learned from you. So I guess going into our, you know, second half of the podcast or wrapping up here, however you want to think about it, I want to ask you, you also run a club called Oaklantis. Can you introduce what Oaklantis swimming is? And we'll just go from there.
Yeah. It's, you know, Oaklantis is, it's the only year-round swim school in Oakland. It's the only year-round swim school and swim team in Oakland, and it's affordable for all. And kind of the inspiration was, you know, came from teaching PE and wanting to have more of an impact. And just that confidence you're talking, you were asking me about earlier, kind of like, well, how do you do that?
Yeah, no, that's a great ending point. And it leaves, I think, a sort of frustrating to-do list perhaps, but that's the reality of the world we live in and the struggles that we face as teachers. And so I want to leave it there. And then hopefully we can come back and expand on the stuff that people found most interesting here. Cause I think, this was a really good conversation and a really good jumping off point for some of the, or at least summary of some of the conversations that you and I have had privately in the past that I wish were recorded, because it is, you know, me drawing on your, you know, now 12 years of experience. So, all right. So we'll end with some quick rapid fire questions. Nothing too serious.
Yeah.
You don't have to think too long about them. What job would you be doing if you weren't doing what you're doing now?
There is no answer that I would be doing this. I would be coaching swimming and teaching PE.
We're 2 for 2 on that answer, actually. So hopefully that doesn't become a trend. Yesterday I asked Jeff Coover about the same thing, and he was silent for about 15 seconds before he was even able to answer.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite specific lift or specific exercise?
I would say I would have to go with the hang clean.
All right. I love it. The true meathead college weightlifting answer. I love it. Favorite place you've competed or trained?
Favorite place I've trained, University of Florida. I mean, that was, you know, to do something with those people that have been there with that history, that was a dream. That was a fantasy of mine that came true. And, it still sometimes seems like a dream.
All right. Great answer. Best single sentence of advice you've given or received in terms of improving your health, fitness, or quality of life.
Go for lifestyle.
I love it. True or false? The best decathlete in the world is the best all around athlete in the world.
I have no idea. I really don't know. I would say, are you asking me more in a philosophical sense, or if the person who is the best decathlete in the world is the best all around athlete in the world?
Philosophically.
Philosophically, I have this sneaking suspicion that actually baseball players are the best athletes in the world. I know that a lot of people say things like, oh, I don't think baseball players are actually good athletes, but the most pure thing of throwing and catching and hitting a ball, and they're so talented. I just think that I really think that it's baseball players. So,
all right. That's an interesting answer, and I can't wait for the hate mail that follows. However, I will say, in support potentially of your thesis, I have heard that hitting a 90 mile per hour fastball is essentially impossible if you're not an elite level baseball player.
Yeah.
Whereas we can mimic some of the stuff other athletes do. So anyway, for what that's worth. All right, Scott, thanks so much. That was a great conversation. Any closing thoughts or resources you want to throw out there?
Closing thoughts. No, I think that there was a lot in that conversation, and I should just, we should just leave it where it is.
All right, Scott. Well, thanks so much, and can't wait to have you on again in the future soon, hopefully.
All right.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. Thanks again to Scott for his time and thoughtful answers, and I truly hope we can hear more from him soon. Head over to gymclassstrength.com for more on the ways we are working to make physical education the best possible experience we can.